Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes!
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing high.
Yo, it is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast, sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly. Obviously, winning 13 of 15. First time with 4-3 or more game sweeps in a month in 35 years. Like, the yo is going to be good. But let's be honest. There is one reason that yo had to be great. Is someday when you play the first High Hopes pod ever in Archie's life, Archer Fritz's life, the yo had to live up to it. Shout out to Archie, who is undefeated as a Phillies fan. Yep. Magical win. His first game was like one of the all-time regular season games with the Sosa Grand Slam night. Like, Archie, good luck, baby. I love this. How you doing? But congrats, man. Mazel tov. I'm so happy. What an exciting thing.
Yeah, well, exciting and unexpected. Little fella was ready to go, it seems like. So, yes, little Arch was 3 weeks early.
Well, Zoe was 5 weeks early, so trust me, I know that game, buddy.
I don't even remember that. I don't remember that. Yeah, that's crazy. So, yeah.
She was 4 pounds and 13 ounces when she was born. She was real little.
Yeah, that's because Arch... So Walk was over 8, Sonny was over 8, and he's like 6, and now he's... But picking up, it's like picking up air. Like, it's just, it's crazy how
they
small.
Let us take her home. I was like, you're letting us have this little tiny thing. It's so with you, dude.
Yeah. So, it was an eventful time in the hospital.
By the way, I have to tell everyone, I think it was both me and Tucker got a text of, Archie, you sitting there with Archie the night he was born, watching the Threshers on your laptop. That happened.
Oh, yeah. Well,
watched the Threshers before the Phillies. So it is, we are nailing it right now.
Well, they had a doubleheader on Friday. So, and dude, being in the hospital room it's like there's just nothing. It's the worst. It's you're just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. Like, and, you know, I feel like they always come in and they expect both of us to, like, it's like, you don't even need me. The number three, I'm here for emotional support and to go get food, and I don't know any of this. Like, I'm part of the team, but there's a star player and then there's a role player.
Yes.
In this.
I am the support staff here. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So now Archie watched 2 Threshers games, and then that game Friday night, a real welcome to Philly fanhood for the kiddo, as the stop ball is.
I texted you during it. I was like, this is a good start for the kid. We let him get used to disappointment.
Yeah. Well, again, I do think this city needs to start getting some hair on their chest again with some painful losses. Like, that's the biggest thing that's changed with the Eagles. You know, like, these kids today have no idea what it used to be like. So I would like for a little bit of turbulence to build some mental fortitude when it comes to the football team. But the baseball team, they give us plenty of heartbreak and plenty
forever.
Forever. That's all they usually provide is that. So, no, it was funny. We were in the room on Friday night and the stop ball happens, and the nurse is in, like, doing vitals and checking on Arch, who I keep wanting to call Sutton. But
I can imagine
because we were just here with Sonny.
Exactly.
and the stop ball happens. The nurse is, like, you know, doing her job. It's 12:15 at night, and I'm over there, and I let out like, damn, like a damn it. And the nurse goes, what is it, a replay? And I'm like, no, it's not a replay. This is happening. I know it sounds crazy, but she was still in the room for the Sosa home run, which I was like, yes. So I do wonder if she was worried about sending old Archie home to a stable household. But yes, all good. And we finally got out of there on Saturday.
That's awesome, man. And then, like, just a neat way to start Archie's life from a Phillies perspective. I mean, what? Look, you know, I don't know what my first Phillies game was. My dad didn't tell me. I don't remember. Like, the fact that someday you can, like, show him that inning and be like, Arch, this was when you were born is such a... It's pretty, I'm really happy because it really felt when that stop ball was caught that it was like, all right.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the Phillies game. I thought you were talking about the Threshers game.
No, I was not. I was talking about the Phillies, but yeah, both, you know. Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part. Like, Walker doesn't really have any, like, the only sports related thing with him is that we knew he's a boy when Jill got super into the 22 Phillies out of nowhere. And we're like, that's different. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Sutton, the only sport, of course, because the way our minds work, everything goes back to like, has this related to sports or like,
sure,
and, during a time period in your life?
When Zoe was born, the night it was a Monday, she got born Tuesday morning, but it was a Monday night Eagles game. It was against Wash, it was like the last great game Wentz played as an Eagle. I feel like,
oh, the Matt Collins game.
You remember that game? Yes. So we watched the
Eagles
in labor. No, not that one. Not 17. Okay. It was like the last great one he played. It would have been
18. Oh, the Greg Ward game.
The Greg Ward game. Yes. Yeah. Yes. We watched it in the hospital. Me and Emily, as she's in labor. And like, I'll, you know, it's so true. Yeah.
Sonny, we knew we were having, Jill told me we were having a second the night that Maxi hit those threes against the Knicks.
Oh, wow. That was awesome.
They're all coming back. Yeah, so. Yeah. Everything relates to sports. But yes, Archer. See, Archer's his full name.
But great name, by the way. Archer.
Thank you.
Both. I didn't know it was Archer at first because you texted us Archie, and I was like, Archie, elite freaking name. Elite. And then when I found out it was Archer, I'm like, that's even cooler because you get the Archie, and Archer itself is badass, dude.
And Arch. So, like, if I wanted to call him quick. The way that I funnel names, and this is, again, this could sound like a sicko, but the way that they think about names is... Can I yell this out quickly at a baseball game?
Of course.
Hum Arch, you know, like, just let him know that I'm right there. But yeah, all three are fun. I found myself calling him Arch more than anything, which is fun.
Well, Arch is great. And he's got the Arch Manning thing coming. I hope he's good. So my one question though, as someone, you know, last name is a noun. Seltzer is a thing. Do you think Sutton will be upset? You've got Walker, a verb.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Archer, a verb. Sutton.
Don't know what that is.
Yeah, just a name.
Simply a name. Yeah.
I think you'll explain that to him someday.
Yeah, hopefully he's all right. Yeah, everything else is a literal thing except the Sutton.
That's what I'm saying. You know?
Yeah. No.
You have to teach Archer archery. I mean, you just have to, right? I mean, he has to be a good archer.
Yeah, I agree. And this would also make, and maybe Sutton will get a little jealous of this one, but I did name both Walker and Archer members of their respective draft class. So, so Walker could be named after Walker Jenkins. Who's to say? He got called up this week. And Archer could have been named after Archer Horn, who was,
of course,
mentioned as one of the guys that I was interested in them drafting before they got Tyler Spangler. So it's all symmetrical. It's perfect.
It's great. It's like, oh, who you named after? Oh, I'm named after this famous thinker. I was named after a guy who got drafted. He never made it to the majors, flamed out in single A, but he's a guy.
Well, Archer Horn hasn't even made it to the majors. He took his name out of the draft to go to Stanford. So
it's too good.
So we'll have to track his progression.
Yeah. That's great. This is beautiful. All right. Let's talk some Phils because it was a thrilling weekend. And especially after, look, we haven't talked much since that. We talked at the end of the Mariners series, but you and I haven't. That's what I thought. I was like, we didn't talk after that because Tucker and I did. You know, they go and lose that first game. That was like the lockiest lock loss in the history of Phillies baseball. Going to the West Coast after the walk-off and playing the next day. Like, they were going to lose. Second one lose. Getting a little like, okay, it was so funny how quickly everyone went from 9 straight were great to like the 2 losses, like, oh yeah, they're bad again, and then 4 straight again, man. And I know that the Angels, it's insane the amount of ninth inning games they have lost. The stats regard, they got like 6 or 7 more than any other team in baseball, so like, you know, and I get it. We've heard, you and I work at WIP, right? There's so many calls, shout out to Chuck and Cherry Hill. So many people going 5-21 against good play, the best teams in the league, but whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they haven't beaten anyone this streak, whatever. They got something, man. Like, they're flawed. They're not the favorite. Like, I'll still pick the Dodgers to win it all and whatever. this team has something, dude. Like, there is an energy and a vibes and a belief and a way of playing baseball. And again, I know that it's just been 1 month and they've done this and we know they revert and we've seen it. But today, on August 31st, I come into this pod feeling by far the most hopeful about this team that I've felt all year. Like, nothing's even close. Like, the way they play, the way they fight, I mean, three ninth inning wins this season when they were down like three or four runs or whatever it was, like, they're the only team in baseball to have three. No other team has more than two. The NL East has two combined. Jason Stark put that out. You see guys like Hill and Sosa and BDLC, and like, there's an energy to this team that they haven't had since 22, it feels like, where they've been good. They've had some good vibes moments and stuff, but it feels, and again, I know they're flawed, but it does feel like the way they're playing right now and the feeding off each other and stuff, it feels like for the first time all year, I know they played well after Maddie came in. It feels like they've really found something as a team, as a group. And that's been the most encouraging thing for me. So.
Yeah, I mean, they found a spark. And I think the Iowa game certainly helped bring them together and stuff like that. And they might just be August merchants. I don't know what it is about this month, but 22, they were great in August. 23, they were great in August. The 23, we talk about the best you felt about this team over the last couple of years. The 23 August, where you had the Trey stuff, the Lorenzo no-hitter, the Bryce clutch home runs, like that was awesome. Like, okay, here we go. And 24 was a total dumpster fire. There was no good moments after, like,
after June. The first game in London was amazing. Yeah. And then it was all over.
Yeah. All pain. March to a slow death. And then, I mean, last year was the best I felt about them with the, like, when they got Bader and all the Bader energy, like that's how this feels right now, is much like when they got Harrison Bader. The thing about this team is that, I think the Mattingly-ness. Now, I have my issues with Don 100%. Like, the bullpen stuff still drives me nuts sometimes. But I do think that there's a different sense of like taking this personally. Yeah, taking this personally, being accountable, things like that. You feel good about where the bench is. I mean, the bench, like, when they used to have to go to the bench, you were like, well, this is not going to work out. Now, when they go to the bench, I'm just waiting for one of those guys to have a moment, which is awesome.
Totally, dude. I mean, Derek Hill and Sosa have been incredibly clutch. Like, they've been good for like, Sosa struggled early. He's been great lately. But just in terms of pinch hits and clutch and coming in spots, like, when was the last time the Phillies had this many big pinch hits in a year? Like, I don't remember.
08, Dobbs? I mean,
yeah, that's what I mean. It's been a long time.
Stairs, when they got Stairs. Yeah. I mean, but you talk about some of the benches they've gone into the postseason, and not to make everything about a bench, but it does matter, especially in today's day and age where, you know, platoons are more and more prevalent, mm-hmm. and you need a lot of, you need 26 guys to win a World Series. Yeah. It's not just one guy kind of carrying you. So it's hard to separate how they played this weekend versus the opponent they played, you know. And they still got shut down by Kikuchi and Detmers. Actually, they did a pretty good job. They had traffic on the bases. They just weren't able to get more runs across. They had eight hits against him, which I think is a win, given how well he's pitched recently.
Yeah, he's good.
By the way, the Angels are a good example for anyone out there that says, hey, I want to be more scouting dependent and not analytically dependent. Like, the Angels fired Mike Maddux, who forever has been like a legend in the pitching community, but has turned into a dinosaur like all these guys have. And they've had the best ERA in baseball since they fired him, because they went to more, again, analytically driven stuff. And you look at the team and it's a good point of, if this is really what you want, this is what you're going to get. This is what they were 2012 mm-hmm. to 2012 to Klentak. You know, Klentak had his issues, but I think that he was trying to get them into a modern way, I guess. And the Angels are looking at the Phillies, what they were in the 2013-ish type era. Anyway, so they stink. They have 2.5 hitters, if you want to count Wade Mechler as a half a hitter. And
so it's Neto, Trout, and Wade Mechler. Is that it?
That's about it. I mean,
I'm with you. I agree. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Like, Vaughn Grissom has some interesting underlying numbers and stuff like that. I can't believe how bad Christian Moore is. He's hitting like 150. I liked him a lot coming out of Tennessee. Who cares? But the bullpen's horrendous.
Good thing you didn't name your son Christian, am I right?
Exactly. The bullpen's horrendous. Kurt Suzuki was tanking that game on Saturday. He
Big
let
time.
he let his rookie making his major league debut pitch three innings, including extras. It's crazy. So, they are horrible. That Ryan Johnson guy who started on Saturday is, I think, stuff wise, the worst starter in baseball.
It looked like you could notice it when he was I looked up. I was like talking to Emily, and I looked up, and I was like, for half a second, thought it was a position player pitching. I didn't really. Yeah. It went fast, but like the way he wound up and threw, like it was, like it looked off.
Well, it looked like I thought I was watching a baseball game in like 2005.
Yeah,
it was just slop. I mean, that's how the game used to be. Just a bunch of those guys. No wonder they hit over 300 all the time. Like Ryan Johnson would have been a number two in 2005. That's how terrible he was. And they only scored one run off him, which was quite annoying. So, like on one hand, I am thrilled that they show fight and they come back and they add on. They're doing some of the little things right. And I agree with the vibes. I think that's really, really important, all that good stuff. On the other hand, that team is just they're walking dead. And they're trying to lose. I mean, they're not actively going out there and putting their best foot forward to win. So happy they won. Need sweeps. You got to rack up them at this time of the year. You're not tied with the Cubs. You got to stay ahead of the Cubs because they own the tiebreaker over us. But overall, positive.
Yeah, and look, the fact that they're tied with the Cubs is very impressive, and that is a real turnaround for them.
Dude, PCA.
Oh, like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, that might have been, like, the best month we've seen a player have. I mean, he was insane in August.
Dude, first of all, I'm so glad someone besides Shohei is winning the MVP.
Yeah, I know. It gets boring and tiring and all that. And, like, and not just winning it, like, deserves to win it. Like, deserved. PCA should be the MVP. Like, done.
He's the best defender in the sport. Watching him play center field is an absolute treat. I've never seen someone make it look as easy as him. I'm not going back to Andrew Jones. Like, I remember Andrew Jones, but I didn't consume all the Andrew Jones.
I know what you mean.
Game out there. And I'm Griffey. No, I don't. I have
That's
no idea.
The Griffey was what popped in my head. But yeah, Jim Edmonds. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But PCA just makes it look so easy. And then it's like, he's such a good. And by the way, he was horrible until June, you know, because
it's unbelievable. I know. It's crazy.
And then you look up, his OPS is 950. He's got 37 home runs while being the best.
32 steals. He's going to get 40-40. We're going to have another 40-40 guy. Like, it's the August he had, I mean, it is, he's like all the stats is like first player to do this. It's like he's on lists with like Ruth and Williams and all these people. Like, it's crazy. And I know we've talked about this before on the pod, but like, it will never, ever get tired to say he was a Met and they traded him to Cubs.
Yes.
I will never get tired of that. I have to always remind people that. Thank you.
It's crazy. But yeah, he's pretty remarkable right now. And looking at the numbers, knowing how well he plays defensively, it is, it's one of the best all around seasons we've ever seen. Yeah. I mean, is he going to finish the year with 10 plus war? I mean, he has to.
Yeah. Well, he's like nine, isn't he at nine? Yeah. Right? He's like 9.2 or something. Yeah. He's like so far ahead. I think second's like five something. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's even better than the season Bobby Witt had a couple of years ago, where he played the best shortstop in the league and batted like 330 with like 35 homers and 30. Like, it might be better than that. You know, and that was like an unreal season a few years ago, and should have won the MVP if it weren't for Ohtani.
By the way, quick off this whole conversation, we mentioned his stolen bases. Like, there had to have been something teams were cheating with last year with all the stolen base numbers, because they've gone down this year. I mean, last year we saw
drastically.
So, and I think a lot of it had to do with, do you remember the rule they put in at the beginning of the year that the coaches have to stay in the box?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that had to have been something.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, I mean, Shohei had a 50-50 year. We had
50-50. Acuna went 40-70 a couple years. You know, like, I know.
Soto got 40 bags last 40, year.
Yeah, I know. I think he got just under. I think he was like 40, 30. I was close. Something like that.
Still. Right, I know. What? Soto can't move. Yeah. So
Trey Turner can't take advantage of that, but whatever.
Oh, why would he? By the way, funny having Fransky on the call. And
I know.
And he going, a stolen base for Trey.
And how about when he got the hit with the runners in scoring position? It was like, oh, you know, so good.
Yes, yeah. Well, the funniest part, because T-Mac doesn't pull off, or he doesn't do the sarcasm. I mean, Fransky's whole bit is.
Are you kidding me? Sarcastic. It's the best. He's so good at it. Yeah, like he had the one a few days ago where they were talking about Stocker is talking about Harper, and he's like, oh, well, you know, you can bat him first. And he's like, yeah, but you can't. And he's like, but he doesn't want to. And okay. Like, he's just so like, he's hilarious, man. Yeah. I think too, like, not to go on a tangent, but I do think that, you know, the job of local broadcasters, like, I'm not saying you're supposed to be a homer, but you're supposed to be a fan of the team. You're supposed to be excited about it and all that. Like, and I, Francie, honestly, might be the best I've ever heard at, like, clearly excited as a fan of the Phillies, all that, but like, keeps it real. And you don't hear that often on those type of broadcasts. We say it all the time. We're so lucky to have all the guys. I mean, T-Mac's awesome. We're so lucky to have all the guys we've had. But like, I think Franski is legitimately one of the best play-by-play guys I've ever heard in my life. I think he's that good.
Yeah, I mean, to go from, you know, having Harry for all those years,
yeah,
into Franski, and obviously T-Mac as well. But Franski, I just like, I could listen to his Sosa home run call over totally. And over and over again.
Yeah, he destroyed that ball. Oh, it's so good, man. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah,
he rises to the moment. He rises really to the does. Moment. And he doesn't like hearing his calls again, which is the
I know, which is so funny. I love that. I get it. I never listen to anything I do. So
nah,
I
totally good idea.
Yeah, I know. Everyone hates my voice, so I probably will too. All right, let's get to some of the actual action. We'll do the Sosa thing. There, you know, we'll talk about that game. But I think the biggest thing, and I think you tweeted it, but like, there is no question, especially considering the opponent, the single biggest thing that happened in these three games this weekend was Zach Wheeler yesterday. Like, we have talk so much, so concerned, 6-7 straight starts, whatever it was, the last one maybe the worst, you know, is it a mechanical thing, is he tipping, all this. He looked really good, you know, struggled a little early, but then got it together and was just, you know, pretty, like, I don't want to say lights out, but like, 6 innings, 1 run, 6 Ks, like, he looked much better than he has over those 6-7 starts, and sounded positive about it after.
100%. Yeah, so I think he's the one that I can watch and the way that he pitched yesterday and feel like, I don't feel as if he was facing the Angels. I think that would have worked against anyone. And I would not have said that in the first inning where I was getting 2013 Halliday flashbacks. Yeah. But after that, he looked exactly like Zach Wheeler. And it was huge. And I think the biggest thing that happened for him is, well, first off, just what I saw is that the fastball command was much better. Like, actually able to pitch both sides, go up, down, whenever he wanted, having late life on it, being able to blow it past guys. You know, that you saw that with the way he was pitching. The split had nice depth to it again, which was good to see. And then I thought the sweeper was how it had been before he went on this 6-8 start stretch. So the biggest thing that came back is the fastball command. I assume that is something working with Caleb Cotham, working with the pitching staff, they probably found some kind of mechanical tweak and they got it back. The one thing that I thought I noticed is I felt like he was doing a much better job of when he plants that foot, that front foot landing spot, I felt like he was able to stay back more and get more of the recoil, I guess, to it. So I felt like he did a much better job of staying back, staying behind the baseball, and letting it kind of get through the zone rather than to the zone. So I'm sure that they worked. I'm sure that they, you know, I think he had little elbow drop stuff, and maybe he was just getting back on top of the baseball again. But I thought he looked like Zach Wheeler, and that's huge. And now you look at where the rotation is, and you had the Wheeler concern. I think it's still, you can still have your guard up with Zach Wheeler. But all of a sudden, I thought Sanchez looked like Sanchez. I
mean, he was awesome.
The fact that you were in the seventh inning again and he was at 70 some pitches, it was like, this is Chris Sanchez.
You could argue they could have given him the eighth. It was at 91 or something like that, you know.
He was only 91 pitches. So I'm sure they're worried a little bit about fatigue at this point of the year.
I was fine with them not. I'm just saying you could argue it.
100%. So but then you look at now where the staff is with Painter's development, with Nola turning around, Lizardo's been money, Sanchez hopefully back, and then Wheeler, there's no holes, you know, there's no real holes in the rotation right now, which is huge. So yeah, and heading down the stretch from where you're trying to catch the Braves, you're trying to lock down the one seed for the wild card, you need those guys to be money, and it seems like they're starting to fire on all cylinders.
Yeah, it's so true, especially, you know, the getting Wheeler and Sanchez back. We've talked about this, but they don't have a chance if those guys don't get back to who they are and what they can be. They can't win. And it's huge seeing these starts. And I felt confident they would. I mean, we've seen Wheeler go through this before, and I know the little different because of the thoracic outlet and all that. Not sure how he'd come back, but super duper encouraging. And really the painter, I want to get the painter a sec, but the painter NOLA resurgence, to your point about maybe beating the Cubs and having that series here, or, you know, beating the Braves 5 of 7 and having a chance, or whatever it is, so important to be able to compete in every game. Whereas there were 2 days a week where they were just at such a massive disadvantage. I mean, that was it. They went like 2.5 months without a win from the fifth starter, or winning a game when the fifth starter started. So huge. All right, let's get to Painter. Cause like a recent classic Painter start Friday, first inning, I'm like, well, guess it's one of those nights. Awesome. 3 innings in the first, struggling, gets out of it, and then nails the rest of the game. Was it only gets to 5 or 6, like didn't pitch a ton, but still, like, his struggles in the first inning are definitely a thing, but his ability to right the ship and that the toughness and fortitude he's shown, I think it's been super encouraging overall, but he's obviously got to figure the first inning thing out.
Yeah, and that comes with time, and he probably has to just change up his routine a little bit, make sure he's good to go, because it seems like, man, it seems like he's just not warmed up enough, because he comes out, it's like 95, 94, totally. He's all over the place, and then once he locks in, and he's fine. It's just, you know, maybe he's not throwing it all, or maybe he's not stretching it all, and he's just, hey, I'm going to take the mound completely cold, and we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, that's a good idea, right?
Yeah. But it usually just comes down to changing his routine, making sure that he is firing on all cylinders, and then, I mean, he retired 15 straight at one point. Yeah, totally. Now, they're facing a lineup with 2.5 hitters in it, so it's not the end-all, be-all, but it's not nothing either, and it's so funny watching him and Lizardo pitch, because they both have 98 in their back pocket, but they pitch like junk ballers, and it's modern baseball where even your junk ballers throw hard. Like, they both just throw all their off-speed pitches and then use their fastball as a show me, or like a surprise pitch for guys, or they actually, instead of hunting strikeouts with your curveball, breaking ball stuff, they hunt strikeouts with their fastball, which is not exactly what it used to be. I mean, the old adage growing up was like, you got to establish your fastball. And it's like, well, no, you don't. I mean, like, you need fastball command. I agree. Mm-hmm. But these guys are like, you know, spitting in the face of the idea that you need to come out and throw eight straight
stuff. It's changed so much, man. Right. Know. You know? Yeah.
Well, I wonder if there's ever going to be a market inefficiency of throwing a 2-1 fastball again.
There might be. Of course. I think this stuff always flips around. I bet you there will be. You know,
because I don't, I need to go next one, tonight's game. I'm going to watch how many times there's a 2-0 or 3-1 count. They throw a fastball, because they don't ever do it anymore. It's strictly breaking balls. And maybe that'll be the new inefficiency, is getting back to the 2-1 fastball to surprise or trick a hitter.
Yeah. I mean, right.
What a crazy concept. But yeah, no, he's continuing to evolve. I think the most important thing is the mental fortitude. I think early in the year, he probably folds after that first inning.
But I totally agree.
He really pitched his way through it and was pretty nails and money after. So it continues to develop in the right direction. There was some fastball stuff early I didn't love, and then the fastball locked in, which was big. But the Painter development's been very, very good and much needed.
It's super, super important. And especially, you know, if he can give you some stuff out of the bullpen in the playoffs, potentially, you know, he looks so much better. And the toughness and fortitude that he's shown, and not just in starts like the first inning and then being able to reestablish and you know, plow through guys, but the his ability to he was sent down to the minors for like a week and a half. We're all like, they're bringing him back already, all this stuff, and he has really handled it incredibly well, especially for such a young kid. So I've been really impressed with him.
Yeah, and obviously credit to the PD staff for what they did when he went down there, and his ability to adjust, and their ability to adjust has been, I mean, it's, I thought this was going to be an offseason thing. I thought there's no way they were going to be able to fix this in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and they just did. They just did.
All right. We're going to get to the bag in a minute, but I want to, two more quick things. One, the baby boy. So look at this. Baby boy, baby boy. This is perfect. Perfect timing.
I know.
Dude, Alex McFarland is legit. Like, he has stuff. I checked it just to wonder, because like, you watch it and it pops. His fastball, according to Savant, is in the 99.8th percentile of Major League Baseball. 99.8 percentile. That's how hard this guy throws. It's look, he's a kid, you know, never pitched in the majors before now, all that stuff. Who knows when the bright lights come on and all that, but he does feel like the type of guy who, like, potentially could make a difference for this team. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's an arm they didn't have. They didn't have anyone like this, and they obviously need setup help. I'm pretty enthused about Alex McFarlane and the potential for him to help this team.
Yeah. Huge. I did feel like that. What was that one CNN? It was guys on CNN, and the wife has to come in and get the kid.
It's so good.
That's what it felt like. Yeah. Alex McFarlane is a total bullpen riser. And we had a lot of questions about this pen heading down the stretch run. Who can we turn to? Who can we rely on? Kind of a shaky bowling weekend. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't think Friday.
The 8th on the, what was it, the Saturday?
Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday. Now, I mean,
Neto's just a homer. But
Neto's a good little player, but still. And then Friday, I didn't think it was really his fault. Like, Virage just makes that play. They're fine.
Yeah, it was a horrible. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, but McFarlane, I just continue to come back to, they really had this sitting in Reading until mid-July throwing 100. Facing double-A hitters. And they were like, you know what? I think we're probably going to trade this guy. And it's just, why? He could have been here. He could have been here 2 months ago, and they decided not to keep his numbers up to possibly trade him versus, hey, a homegrown guy of talent. Maybe let's see if he can help our bullpen out. It was such a waste of everyone's time. What did you think you were going to get for a 25-year-old reliever?
That would be better than the potential upside of what he can give you. It's just so strange.
Oh, so annoying. It was so annoying. Anyway, but hey. We won't hold the past transgressions against them. He's here now, and he is and looks fine in a leverage spot yesterday. I know that was more circumstantial than anything. And yes, Kirkering did get the last couple outs. So, but technically, McFarlane's spot was a bigger spot at the point of the game. So, okay, we take that. He ate Trout's lunch money all weekend long. I mean, that first on Friday night, it was 3 pitches.
It was awesome.
And he mowed him down. So I've been really impressed. The stuff plays. The command, I think, has been a little overblown. Like, he'll walk guys, but I think he knows where the ball's going. Like, Ben Joyce had no idea where the ball's going. That's command issues. That is, he has no idea what he's doing out there. I think McFarlane has an idea of where the ball's at least going. So, yeah. It was good seeing him stay calm in a leverage spot. You hope that he can eventually take Kirkering's spot. And then if you can go Bolin and McFarlane, Kirkering in a little lower leverage spot, it's not too bad. Like Painter, we've talked about being in the bullpen, but he's not an eighth inning guy.
He's not a bullpen pitcher either. He's never done it.
He's a guy that can help you out in the fifth, sixth, seventh. Like, God forbid you need him for 3 innings or 2 innings. So, But McFarlane legitimately changes the makeup of that bullpen in a huge way. And the fact that he's just coming out and you got to face him in like the 7th has to be demoralizing. Like you think you have a chance tonight. Here's McFarlane, Bolin, Duran to close it out. And how about Duran? A 2-inning win yesterday.
Did you? I'm hoping you were too busy and didn't listen to the pod that Tucker and I did on Thursday or Friday or whatever it was. But I said in that pod, I'm like, why have we not done an up-down yet with Duran? Like, this guy's going to have to pitch more than an inning at some point in the playoffs. And we've got 20-something games left, and he's never done one here. What are we doing? And then confirmed Don Mattingly, listener of the pod. So thanks.
Yeah, man. Nothing to do with the bullpen being in a bit of a tight spot.
Appreciate you listening, Don. That's what I'm saying. That was cool to see because they're going to need, if nothing else, they're going to need to know that he could do it,
And he said he could do it. I mean,
of course. But he.
The biggest thing that I want is like, let's say you need to use Bolin in the 7th, and I don't want 2 innings of Duran like all the time, but I need to know that he can come in and like, with 2 outs, runners on 2nd and 3rd, or bases low. Like, I need to know how he would handle a dirty inning in like the 8th, and then being able to come back out for the 9th. I mean, that's when the walk to Mookie happened. The Mookie walk was not. I think it was the 8th. I don't think it was the 9th. I think it was the 8th. Because I think he came in
I think he did. I think you're right. Yeah, because he came in for more than one. I think so. I'm almost positive, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think we had seen that until that point in the year. And obviously the famous one from last year was Robertson, who...
Oh, buddy. How could we ever forget?
Dude, the bullpen management in game one was one of the worst management.
Horrible.
Like, one of the worst managed bullpens I've ever seen. It was just infuriating.
It was awful. Yeah. All right. One last thing. Oh, and by the way, I looked it up. I was thinking with the Painter thing, because I... sometimes they're just guys who need a little time to settle in. Tom Glavine, I always remember being like that. So I want to check the numbers just to be sure. And I was right. Tom Glavine's OPS allowed in the first inning of games in his career is 751. In no other inning was he higher than 729. And in most, he's 645, 666, 654, you know, so 703, 704. So sometimes they're just guys who they need an inning to kind of get settled. And you hope that's not it continues, but it is not like something that hasn't happened before. All right.
The old adage is you got to get the aces before they settle in.
Right. Yeah.
That's been a thing forever for a reason.
Yeah. And we've talked about a few.
Not that
here.
Painter is a, you know, future ace right now. But
all right, last thing, and then you can hit other stuff in the bag. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Major League Baseball leader in walks coming off a the guy has gotten a lot of love, a lot of hate. It's all up and down, this and that, whatever. And Bryce Harper this past month was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
He was awesome. Like, he had an over 500 base percentage for the freaking month, dude. Like, I want to acknowledge what Bryce did and how important it's been. And ever since Arraez got here, look, all of a sudden, look at what Bryce is. I just think it deserves mention. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of thought as the day that we're going to do the podcast and then Jill went into labor, I was fully prepared to come on and start talking about how we're just not talking about this Bryce season.
Yeah, right.
Because every time you talk positively about him, people shout you down saying, what has he won? The Nationals got rid of him. Is he elite? Is he not elite? Blah, 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 blah. So it's not even worth talking about because people just get so worked up about it. But like the people that can sit back and appreciate watching, is he still elite? Probably not. But watching a Hall of Fame player still having really, really, really good, you know, seasons in their mid 30s or early 30s, I think we can appreciate that and understand where he is in his baseball journey. And what sucks is like I know you can't take out the month of July. I'm not saying you should take out the month of July, but if he had a normal Bryce month,
totally, dude.
I mean, he might still finish top five in MVP. Like if things go the way they are, obviously we know that BCA or Shohei is going to win it, but a top five MVP finish for Bryce is a huge win. If he just
top 10, Jack, after, you know, where like top 10 would be a big win.
If he had a normal Bryce year, if he had a normal Bryce month, he'd be squarely in there. His OPS would be over 900. It's been, I think the walk thing has allowed him to, you know, settle in at the plate a little bit, not feel like he has to do too much. It's good to see some of the power coming back. It's good to see him going the opposite way all the time now. It's like, thank you. This is when you're at your best, is when you're just thinking the opposite way. So, I keep waiting for the Schwarber, you know, run to kind of happen again, where he can go nuclear. Mm-hmm. The Trey run may never happen. Only 7 years left. Only 7 years left.
Oh, God.
But at least we have.
I don't even have words. I was trying to think of something to say, and I'm like, I got nothing here.
It's one you just gotta forget exists in a way.
Yes, it's very easy when he's on your TV every night, right?
Yeah, but Bryce is still doing it. You know, Bryce is still doing it, and it's pretty remarkable. Did you realize before he broke his thumb, when Blake Snell broke his thumb in 22, that his OPS at that point was over 1,000?
I did not really.
So me and Arch, as we were killing time, I'd never watched the full Bedlam at the Bank game, you know,
start to finish. You mean? Yeah.
So they're talking about Bryce and they were like, yeah, you know, before that broken thumb, he had an OPS over 1,000 and was on his way to possibly winning his second MVP. And was like, oh, man, a third MVP.
Can you imagine back to back MVPs though?
I know, but he was like kind of trending that way. Yeah, and then, if those remember, because it brought me back to July of this year and how awful it was, because that's how he was in September before the postseason. Yeah. Like that September when he came back,
it was terrible.
Atrocious.
It wasn't until the homer in St. Louis that he kind of got going. Yeah.
I'll never forget. I think we had the camera on leading into the postseason series, and he was like, are we going to be like, Bryce's legacy, is it going to be in question or whatever if he has a bad postseason? And then he went on and had a great run until game four of the World Series, and then it all kind of fell apart after that. So, but yeah, he has to be talked about. He's been great, and still doing it versus like seeing some of the other guys slow down, like have the year Mookie has had and some guys like that. And this guy is still putting up. He's a top 20 hitter in the sport. You want to say top 15? Okay. But that was not the way he was talked about heading into the year. He was talked about like he was, you know, barreling towards the grave as a baseball player. And he stayed fully healthy, which is huge. And knock on wood with that. But
he has a chance to play 162 for the first time in his career, which is pretty wild. So I don't know that I want him to, but just the idea that he can. And look, after the injuries he's had, he is 33, the offseason stuff, the elite stuff and all that. Like, you know, Bryce, whatever everyone, like Bryce was challenged this offseason by his own team. And he has responded. And like that in and of itself is impressive. All right, let's get to the bag. But first, Jack.
Yes.
Did you know that one in three people regularly suffer from nausea?
Well, now I do.
Now you do. And my wife, Emily, one of those people. And it's been such a problem in our lives. Like a car ride is a adventure in pain tolerance. She basically has her head between her legs the entire ride. She goes green. We can't talk. The idea of having a conversation or enjoying the ride is foreign to us, non-existent. Trains, boats, forget about it. Cruise. Wouldn't it be nice to take a cruise, Jack?
And she doesn't fake it just to get you to stop talking?
No, believe it or not.
It's real?
Well, so she, trust me, she has listened to me talk more than anyone has ever listened to anyone talk. She is very willing to be like, I need a break from you talking. She has no problem saying that. Trust me. But dude, it's awful. I talk to her. She doesn't respond. So yeah, I guess it does just shut me down, even if it's not on purpose. But it's been horrible, man. Cruise can't go on the water. It's not even a possibility. Horrible. That's until Relief Band came into our lives. For us, Relief Band's been an absolute miracle. I honestly mean that. It's a life changer. Emily's completely fine in every car ride. We listen to music. We talk. We're hanging out with Zoe. It has been unbelievable. Zero discomfort. It's been life changing, and it's opened up a whole new world of possibilities. Relief Band is 100% natural. That means no pills, no side effects, and it works in just minutes. Relief Band stops nausea from motion sickness, morning sickness, and for meds like GLP-1, Jack, it even works on nausea from hangovers, buddy. I know you're too young to have to really worry about that. But when you get older, you drink and you're crushed. So let me tell you, putting a Relief Band on and not feeling hangover sickness, that'd be pretty sweet. Put Relief Band on your wrist and turn nausea off. Go to reliefband.com and use promo code James. That's J-A-M-E-S for 20% off. Reliefband.com, promo code James. All right, Fritzy.
All right. Not a crazy amount. I actually don't even have anything. We kind of touched on.
Oh, just doing it on the fly.
Well, all the points that I had, we already talked about. I do want to point out.
I was prepared today. I didn't want to screw up Archer's first pod. I really came ready today, you know?
Yeah. Kurt Suzuki was tanking on Saturday. Had to have been. Investigate.
Well, Kurt, it's risky on a one-year deal, you know?
Yeah. Well, why? Yeah. Why would he care?
I'm just pointing out the fact that it's so crazy that he's like, it's the most ridiculous thing. They gave him a one-year deal.
Just an atrocious little answer. Yeah. Atrocious. They've been atrocious. I mean,
for so long, man. Like, so long.
Trotz played in two postseason series.
Yeah, that's all.
They were the first 2 years of his career.
No one to blame but himself.
Yeah. On one hand, you appreciate in today's game staying loyal.
Yes,
you
know? Sure. Yes.
On the other hand,
not at the detriment of your career. Yeah.
Yes. Definitely not that. All right. Just some minor league stuff I want to hit on. We've talked about all the big names. We all know the big names. You know, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening there. You know, Spangsy's playing. Played shortstop yesterday. He struck out a couple times yesterday, but he roped a baseball into right field, which is beautiful to see. So listen, the big names are the big names. Brian Rincon's been unbelievable since like post trade deadline. So maybe feeling relieved that he's still here. I don't know what his future is here, because like he's getting close to being ready.
Yeah,
and I mean, next year's AAA team should be pretty
good. Can we move Trey for a great defensive shortstop? That'd be cool, right? What a thought.
Yeah, as long as the bat's real, maybe.
No, I know.
He still feels like a trade guy to me, but he's at least, I mean, now he's really helping his trade value. He's the fifth prospect in the organization right now.
Wow.
According to Pipeline, who I don't totally trust. But regardless, like he's starting to get back into prospect circles, which is huge. And it'd be a big one for PD, given that he was a 14th round pick they've been pretty good at the first rounders, but they need to start hitting on some of the later round picks as well.
Yeah, sure.
So a couple names just to keep your eye on. There's a guy named Richie Cortese, who is a
I was not expecting the E on the end there, the double E, Richie Cortese.
Yeah, it's C-O-R-T.
I was expecting Cortez.
Well, it's Cortese. So it's an S-E at the end.
Yeah, okay. Cortese? So it could be Cortez. It could be Cortese. It could be...
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, he's a D2 kid, but not PSAC, so it doesn't count. But he, but he's a Division II kid. His ERA in Division II was 5.17, which is crazy. Crazy.
He's in the minor leagues? Like, what are we talking about here?
17th round pick last year.
Has anyone ever had that high an ERA in Division II and actually been drafted? It's wild.
I'm just saying, my ERA was only 8.7 something. Check the caper nine, though. Check the caper nine. It's pretty damn good. Anyway, but yeah, so I think he played other sports and just focused on baseball late. And when they lost Marty Gaire, I was disappointed because, like, we need the bullpen. We need a bullpen of arms. Like, Wei Pan is awesome. He looks like he's back. He was dealing with some arm injury, so he's a relief prospect for them. Obviously, Alex McFarland is one of them, but Cortese should be in there as well because he is, like, sitting 96, 97, and then he throws this, like, just wiffle ball-looking slider. Like, yesterday, 2 innings, 5 Ks. It was the easiest, one of the easiest innings. It was like watching Young Kerkering coming through the system.
I love wiffle balls. Like, there's so few things more, but like when Blake Trinan used to like witch the ball around, like,
yes.
It's just so fun to watch when people can really make a move like that.
You know what it looks like? It looks like, remember Kyle Crick?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the first spin guys.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
Like it does rate, like, there's it touches over 3,000 RPMs. So
that's look, I'm not Mr. RPM. Over 3,000 that's legit. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fastball plays too. So he's an interesting one that can kind of, I hope he ends, he's coming back from an injury. Like, he's only pitched there, I think, for 3 weeks. So I hope they get him in Jersey Shore before the season ends. I'm going to be so sad when the minor league season ends.
As soon as he said before the season ends, I'm like, oh man, you better prepare.
We're close.
It's coming. Yeah.
We're getting close.
But as you sent me that tweet, for anyone who needs to know, a Major League Baseball lockout will not affect the minor leagues. So, you know, that was a big win for you.
As long as some members, well, yes, the other players, yeah. Yes. But like, as long as Gage and some other players are not on the 40-man roster, they will be able to play.
Oh, that makes sense. Good point. Yeah. But either way, you'll have something.
We'll have something. We'll be all right. We'll figure it out. Cade Climie might be their next undrafted rookie success to go along with Otto Kemp, Raider Tellos. Been really good. Keaton Anthony, Nathan Humphreys.
Keaton Anthony, yeah.
Yeah, this kid is from Houston, had an OPS over 1,000. Doesn't seem like he has a position. He's technically playing third base right now, but the thing I like about him is that he just swings super hard, and he seems to have a good eye in the box. And I just think he rakes. It's very early. Very early. And then Carson DeMartini, who was a baby boy from a couple of years ago.
I remember the name. A great name.
Seems like he is settling into his own up in Double A. Don't think he's ever going to be like a star, but I think he's going to be a valuable role player. Always remind me of like someone like the Dodgers would have to just be able to come off the bench. It looks like he's swinging harder, which is good. You want guys to generate more bat speed. It's one of the bigger trends in hitting development right now. Hit a ball to the wall off a lefty yesterday, which was encouraging. But his lineup in Reading right now is like 280 average, 400 OBP. So
that's good.
897 OPS, I believe. So looks like he's turning into a professional hitter, and that is encouraging. And then they did make some changes in the player development.
Ooh, I didn't see this.
Oh, yeah. So Luke Merton is no longer the farm director, but he is now an assistant general manager / like director of hitting. The way it seems like, and Gal wrote a great article on it, but the way that it seems it was happening is that, like, once Preston left and got ascended, that a lot of people, they had, like, I think Luke Merton was doing a lot. You know, he's trying to help on the scouting side, trying to be the hitting guy, and also being the farm director, which is like in charge of everything.
A lot of work. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
So I think he was just spread too thin. And now they're going to hire someone whose sole job is that. Is just being the farm director. They can handle everything else and then let like Luke Merton and let all these guys just get back and settle into the roles that they're supposed to be in. And the way it seemed like in the Gelb article, that I thought was good as well, is it seems like they're being aggressive in trying to make sure that they are in a good spot hitting wise. Because that's been my one issue with the system, is that it never feels like they are I just feel like they're ahead of the times with hitting. It feels like they're behind the times hitting, and especially where they are pitching wise. I think there's like, they're one of the best organizations in baseball. If you want to be a pitcher because of the PD staff, the major league staff, like you want to be a Philly, like they're like one of the five best or at least 10 best PD teams when it comes to pitching. Hitting has always felt like it lags. So it feels like they have acknowledged that and they are being aggressive and trying to get that right, which I think is encouraging because the first step to growth is admitting that you are.
Yes, you have a problem.
Yes,
that's right.
So that's encouraging. We'll see where it goes, but definitely interesting nonetheless. There will be a new farm director.
It's good news. Look, again, just the idea of them acknowledging that there's spread tooth in there and they need to bring someone in. Like, I want them being proactive and putting resources towards that stuff. I was just talking to Emily over the weekend about, and deep cuts, but this is what happens when you're married to us, about Francisco Renteria and how bad the Phillies have been historically with Latin American scouting and development and all that, and how we're turning that around, how it's like one of the most important things for the franchise that we just don't talk about enough. And I'm so with you. I mean, you know, I've said like Dombrowski had some good moves lately. You know, there's been misses and hits on the major league roster, but I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's done behind the scenes, just in terms of like, to what we talked about before, an organization that was like Angels-esque in terms of the way they ran the club. Dombrowski's, you know, made it look and act like a major league organization. And I think that is, now we're taking steps towards becoming one of the better ones. And that's, it's thrilling, honestly.
Well, and it's the most important thing for the 2030s.
Like when it's the 2030s most important trouble. Thing for the franchise, like for the health of the franchise. It is the most important thing.
Not even close. Yeah. Obviously, winning the World Series this year would be massive, but
of course,
making sure that they are healthy and stable for the future when the contracts get a little bit older, you need to make sure. And by the way, like, you know, slowly but surely, like Painter turning a corner, Justin Crawford being super clutch late in games.
Crawford's been and not just that, he's had really, like, if you look since July or whatever, he's been like 3-something. He's been pretty good.
I think 313. I think,
yeah, it's something like that. He's been pretty good.
And late in game seems to be money. Obviously, Mundo is the late game king as of right now. But yeah,
Derek Hill, another catch. Like, it's guy. It's like every week, every other week, the guy's got like, that's one of the better catches I've seen a Philly make in a while.
Yeah. So when we're looking at young players coming up and helping the major league roster, Painter looks serviceable. Crawford's been serviceable, and what McFarland's doing is huge. So there's three. There's three that are finally helping at the big league level, which is big. So all signs seem positive.
Love it. Love it. All right. I don't think we got anything else. I was going to what do I have to promote or anything? We don't really have anything else to promote right now. Just check out the pod, man. Everyone put good thoughts out there for Archer Fritz. I love this. Welcome to the world, buddy. I'm excited. Yes. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a great thing. All right, we'll be back later in the week. Huge series. You know, obviously a little less big than it was, you know, a week ago, now that the Phillies have really created some nice separation there between them and the Padres and the Diamondbacks. But still, like, a bad series here, all of a sudden it's closer and it shouldn't be. So if they can handle business in this series, and, you know, like, especially a sweep, but even 2-3, like, we've seen bad things happen. But, like, if they can handle this series, they're already in great shape to make the playoffs, 90-something%, whatever. But like, winning this series, like, more or less, really, you know, locks it in almost. You know what I mean? So it's a big one.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think Cattell's back tonight. So
he is. Of course. Which would be interesting it'd be interesting to see how that plays out and stuff. So
I can't wait to get mad at Torrey Lovello again. I hate.
Oh, it's gonna be awesome.
He drives me awesome. Nuts.
Yeah, he's good though.
He is.
He's annoying though. He's annoying. Oh, but if you were our manager, we'd love him. Like, during that series when he was doing this, like, the defending his guys, the stub thing, all that stuff, like, we would have loved that, you know?
100%.
Yeah.
If it wasn't all cored up, I mean, I think his contract's up at the end of the year, so.
Nobody.
Could be another name.
Well, the funny thing, too, I was going to say this before, but, like, we haven't really talked about the fact, and look, especially because, like, the Mattingly Bryce thing, we didn't, like, whatever, but, like, that Cora story came out, and they've won, like, 11 of 13 since, or whatever it is. Like, it was, they had just, I think they won the first two of this streak. And it was that Sunday or whatever. And that Cora story comes out and they've just gone nuts. Like, maybe they're fighting for Donnie. Who knows?
A masterclass. A manipulation. Yes. By the front office. Yep.
Beautiful. All right. We'll be back later in the week. And thank you to Tucker. And thank you to Archer. And you know, Walker and Sutton too, and Zoe. We got a family here. And it's
all the kids.
All right. We'll be back later in the week. Until then, he's Fruits and Seltzer.